Welcome to the New Mexico News Podcast, headlines and stories from the land of enchantment. Brought to you by KRQE. Here's Chris McKee and Gabrielle Burkhart.
The focus of our conversation today comes with a News 13 report that's gotten a lot of attention since it first aired last week.
A neighborhood had a dream for a playground. Parents were confident their dreams could finally become a reality. That is until they ran into powerful politics at the highest level in the state. Tonight on News 13, the playground politics of Netherwood Park.
That's the voice of one of our main anchors, Jessica Garate, who just reported a story about the playground politics in Albuquerque and how a former high-ranking New Mexico elected official used her political connections, basically, it sounds like, to put plans for an Albuquerque neighborhood project on hold.
We mentioned the story has received a lot of attention, and this week we thought it would be a great opportunity to give it an extended platform to discuss more of the background about it. This story is something I think is fascinating. And I say that because I think it's an example of how politics can be very personal and very impactful, but at the same time, air quotes, the system of politics can also make people feel as if they're gated off, where sometimes people feel like even though they had a say, they don't feel like they were actually heard.
So let's get into it and introduce our guest today. That's KRQE News 13's evening anchor and reporter Jessica Garate. Thanks for being here again.
It is my pleasure. Always enjoy joining both of you.
So Jess, let's talk about the nuts and bolts of the story. What's the inciting incident here? We know there's an Albuquerque neighborhood and a park there. There's this idea of building a playground, right? Where is this park and exactly what was the neighborhood asking for?
Absolutely. And just starting from the beginning, this is a neighborhood, a really nice neighborhood. It's located between Indian School and I-40. Just to give you a better idea, it's located near UNM North Golf Course. And so that area. There is a park in the middle of this neighborhood, a very popular park, especially during the winter, because you have a lot of kids going to sled. There's a huge hill. So that's the hill that a lot of families like to go to and sled down when we get some snow during the winter months. And so this all came about as we're seeing around Albuquerque, demographics are changing in neighborhoods. And this is a neighborhood where you're starting to see a demographic change. You have a lot of younger families moving in, the elderly in that area moving out, unfortunately passing away. And so you see these younger families moving in. And there's a bunch of families that hang out and they're like, hey, there's a father who's like, hey, I'd really like a playground for our kids. This'd be great. Let's see what we can do. And that's where it all started.
Okay. So the park itself is called Netherwood Park.
Netherwood Park. And it is in the Netherwood neighborhood as well.
So. Okay. We can get into the details here in a bit, but I wanted to just ask you, like, the very broad sort of high level, what happened to this dream? Simply put, based on your reporting, what did you learn?
I've never spent so much time on a playground story. And so there was a lot of, I think there was a lot of miscommunication digging into the story, not on, as far as with neighbors in that area and how this was carried out. And so you had one family taking his kids in tow, knocking on doors saying, hey, I'd really like a playground. But he also felt that he's like, I really need to show what we're looking at so that people have an idea, they can picture it. So he went to their senator or TZ Pino and said, hey, could we get some funding so we can at least get drawings? And he had worked with the Parks and Rec on this, but really felt like he needed, to get some funding to back it and show and come up with some plans for it. And so he did. And then he went to an Ortiz Pino, put that in capital outlay funding, and it was $200,000.
And this is Democratic Senator Gerald Ortiz Pino.
Yeah. Yes. And who represents that area. And so the neighbor went to him and he'd gotten some support and they had a meeting in January. And so they go to the meeting and there was, I've got minutes or an email that kind of wrapped up what exactly happened during that meeting. And there was people that were opposed, people that were for it. And some of those people, that were opposed to it, they were worried about it, the noise level that it would bring. And it mostly came from the people who lived along the park. And so there was some opposition of, the noise, would it bring in bad elements at night? And would people, tempting people to spend the night in that park? And so that was a concern. And the people that supported this said, hey, this is a great way for our kids to come together. This is a, you know, we really would, we want other neighborhoods to come and feel safe in our neighborhood. It's a safe park, and come and please use it. We want to invite others to come here. And so that's kind of where it got going. And so then from that meeting in January, the city's like, okay, well, reach out to the city, tell us who supports it, who doesn't. And so I'm hearing from that there was a lot of support on the people that were pushing for the playground. They had, went door to door again and had a QR code. If you like this, send this to the city. The opposition was doing the same and trying to get emails to the city. And so then they start hearing that the city is not going to go forward with this, but they felt like, you know, talking to families that they had a lot more support. So I went to the city, the Parks and Recs department, and asked, hey, can I get a look at these numbers? And are you moving forward with it? And so they came back immediately and the city says, hey, there's strong opposition. We're not going to move forward with it right now. And I was like, well, I'm hearing the opposite. Can I look at the numbers? And so I go back and forth with the city. I get the numbers and it shows 61 families wanted the playground in the park, 22 did not. So then we have overwhelming support and then lots of questions of why this is not moving forward.
And to be clear, this is like an informal poll. These are people who reached out to the city to express
yes,
yay or nay.
Okay. Yes. And there was some controversy over that because they were saying, you know, they think that some of the people that wanted the playground didn't live in the neighborhood. The people that supported it accused the opposition of doing the same thing. And at the end of the day, they just said, you know, it's taxpayers' money. If people want to park, they want to park. And it shouldn't matter where you live. That was their argument. So there was some controversy in that as well. So they sent these emails all to, you know, trying to show their support or against what they wanted to do with that playground. So
let's jump back just a little bit. You know, these neighbors near Netherwood Park, it's near Indian School, like you mentioned, in I-40 in the heart of the city. They wanted it for a while, years, I remember you mentioned, but this year it seemed like their plans were, you know, becoming a little more real, right? They were getting some buy-in from the city and also Senator Gerald Ortiz Pino, a state lawmaker. How were both entities sort of involved in this process?
So it was interesting because you had, you know, the senator requesting capital outlay funding. And you had the neighbor saying, okay, great, we got a good start. This is really, you know, we get that 200,000. And when I sat down with Senator Ortiz Pino, he did mention he'd gotten a call from Diane Dennish, the former lieutenant governor who lives along the park, that she did not want it. And he said, hey, if, you know, I'm hearing otherwise. And if at the end, you know what, I'll even change the wording in this request. I'll say, if you're right, and this neighborhood doesn't want this playground equipment, it can go to another park in Central Albuquerque.
The funding
could. And it was the $200,000. And now no one gets that $200,000 because, as the story said, it got vetoed and how that all unfolded. But you had, you know, the city was kind of looking at it as in trying to be the in-between and see, you know, what would be best. But even in the end, they also halted plans for it. So
kind of a recap here. You know, we've got essentially this park that's wanted by the neighborhood for a long time. They have a city meeting. There is this collection of opposition and support. In the end, it sounded like there was more support than there was opposition. You've got on the state side, local lawmaker trying to raise funds for this. It gets approved in a capital outlay budget. So that's where we're at, kind of with the funding and where everything stood at that point. But of course, we know the governor had yet to sign it. And that's a big part of whether or not the actual funding gets there. But I guess all this is to say, it seemed like by the end of the legislative session that this was something that was going to happen.
Yes. And it just was, you know, they had no reason to think that the governor would veto funding for the park. And, you know, you're talking about in a capital outlay bill, hundreds of different projects and a lot of, you know, very expensive and costly, $15 million for Balloon Fiesta Park. And you've got this $200,000 for a playground. They just didn't even think about it being vetoed until it did get vetoed. And they really went back and thought that, like, you know, that Diane Dennish was raised questions about how this got vetoed. And I asked the senator about it and Diane Dennish.
The state, as you mentioned, though, you know, had planned to pitch in that $200,000 in capital outlay funding. And, you know, just for our listeners, capital outlay, that's usually what it's used for, right? Mm-hmm. To make improvements on public facilities and parks like this. Is there any idea through your reporting how much this playground was going to cost in the end? Would this have fully funded the project?
And that's a great question, Gabby. You know, I did ask. They really wanted to start using this funding to get a good idea, but thought that $200,000 would be more. The people that supported the playground thought that it'd more than enough to cover it. But if it didn't, that they would go back the next year and ask for some more capital outlay and get it funded, which is how a lot of those projects works. A lot of those projects, some of them are fully funded, but a lot of them aren't. And that was one of the reasons the governor said that she vetoed it. And I never got an actual price tag on it. But if you ask the people who supported it, they felt that, you know, it's a great start. This definitely could have covered it. And if not, they would have been able to get more funding and find other resources for it.
Yeah. So you mentioned it there, but just to be clear, I wanted to ask you, you know, we were at that point where after the meeting, after the session happens, this funding gets put into the bill gets passed by both the House and the Senate, it goes to the governor's desk. But, you know, as you mentioned here, essentially what did happen to the funding? It gets line item vetoed, essentially.
You know, and I asked Diane Dennish point blank, did you call up the governor and have this funding vetoed? And she said, yes, I called her. And I said, if there's anything that comes across that involved Netherwood Park, will you please veto it? And so then you had families that felt like they just did not get a fair shake in this. Senator Ortizzi Pino saying, I've never seen anything like this. It's, you know, he's been in the legislature for decades. And he's like, I didn't feel like if she was going to veto it, I felt like the governor should have reached out to other people to make sure she got it from other people and not just one person. The senator felt that it was really unfair.
Yeah. The main point I gathered from watching your story is that they just felt like they did not have equal access as one woman in that neighborhood, the former lieutenant governor, had to these politicians.
Absolutely. And not just on the state side, it was also on the city side and in the city, you know, and, you know, I really had to press for answers from them as well. And they just didn't want to do an interview. And they also felt that the city had more access, that Diane had more access to the city as well.
Did Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham have an explanation for this line item veto? I mean, you know, it's a playground. It was the only project in Bernalillo County to get vetoed out of all those capital outlay requests.
And I do want to explain, really go into a little bit about how that came about with on the governor's side and me dealing with trying to get answers from her office. I was in close contact with their communications director, Michael Coleman. And the first time I sent him an email, I'm like, hey, I'm working on this story. Can you explain to me why she vetoed this? Gave him all the information, gave it, you know, showed. Took a little while, he gets back and he's like, well, it was just our understanding that most people in that neighborhood did not want the playground. So I was like, well, it's my understanding that that's not the case. And I have the numbers from the city to show it. And I have a senator and families claiming that it was Diane Dennish. And Diane Dennish told us that she called up the governor
and
had this vetoed. So I want to make it really clear. Did the governor talk to anybody else, any other members in this community when she vetoed it? Or does she just talk to Diane? And they went back and forth, came back with a statement. I kept asking for an interview. I asked several times at least three times for an interview. Would not do an interview. And they said they would not discuss who the governor spoke to before she made this veto. So I never got an answer on that and came back and said, Michael Coleman came back and told me, here's the three reasons, and which I had questions for each three reasons that she has. She said, one, if this was really important to Senator Ortizzi Pino, he would have contacted the governor. And my question was, well, do you expect everyone? I mean, there's hundreds of projects. You expect every lawmaker to reach out to the governor. And so I had that question. And then two, he said that it wasn't fully funded. And I said, you know, where did you get those numbers? I'm trying to figure out if it is fully funded. And how often are capital outlay projects fully funded?
Right. That's been a big conversation topic for years.
Yeah. So it's like, well, outlay is never fully funded. And you have to go back. So I'm like, I have these questions. He wrote me back. He said, we're not going to talk anymore about this. Good luck on your piece. I wrote back, I want to be very clear. I've given the governor every single opportunity to do an interview. And I have a lot of questions about your statements and you're not answering them. And I felt that like those issues that she brought, it's not fair to the public. I'm asking those questions for the public. And it wasn't fair for me to not be able to ask her those questions after giving me a statement. And I'm asking for the public. Like, I want to know, this is stuff that people out there want to know. And I thought that it's not fair that we can't ask these follow-up questions to it.
So more on why that project was vetoed, at least from what you could gather out there through the process of reporting. It sounds like, as we discussed a little bit here, that former Lieutenant Governor Diane Dennisch played a big role in the funding getting axed, at least according to what you had learned and what she told you. How did you hear about this, though, that the Lieutenant Governor was maybe playing a role in the vetoing of those funds? She lives in the area, as you mentioned, but yeah, how did you hear that?
So I know people in that neighborhood who had reached out to me saying, hey, this is really crazy that, you know, these families were just kind of shocked. Like, it's over a playground and I can't believe we're getting this much pushback. And then they had heard through all the neighborhood that this Capital Outlay funding had been vetoed. And Diane had mentioned it. And so I just asked her point blank and I reached out to her and I said, hey, did you have this vetoed? And she said, I did call the governor and I did tell her if anything involving Netherwood Park came to her desk to veto it. So that's kind of where it unfolded. I had worked weeks though on this, just looking into what was going on with it and trying to get, because you have this, it was just this bizarre fight and people trying to get the numbers. And I really, you know, I worked prior trying to get the numbers from the city just to see if they're like, you know, we have all the support, but they're still not moving forward. And we think it's because Diane has a louder voice and more connections to the city and state.
Yeah. And I know that's something, you know, through your reporting, you were trying to confirm and see if there's any truth to it, right? That's part of the process. But when you interviewed Diane Dennisch, she told you, quote, I spoke with the governor about this several weeks ago. But it also seemed like she did not think that that was out of the ordinary, right? What did you learn from your conversation with Diane Dennisch?
She really didn't. She's like, you know, I've worked very hard for my state. And she, you know, that was her quote, is that, you know, she's worked very hard and she's worked to help get these people elected. And that, you know, she does have extensive background in early childhood. And so she was talking to the governor about a lot of different issues that were coming across her desk. And so, you know, she did not deny it or say, you know, she's like, yes, I brought it up. And I thought that, you know, a lot of people here didn't want it. And so, you know, she stood by it and said, I feel in the end, you know, she's like, I was fighting for my neighborhood.
Let's talk a little bit more about what you learned as well in your interview. If it sounds like this was maybe a personal choice that she did not want this park, what did she though say to you about her reasonings from her opposition towards this idea of the, I should say, playground in the park?
Absolutely. She had, you know, she had some valid concerns. She was, you know, she's lived there decades and has seen, you know, she loves having it an open space because even while we were doing the interview, there's kids out there playing soccer. She didn't want it obstructed. She wanted it just open. And that even when the kids come to play on the hill, like they, you know, they really enjoy, like, you know, having those families come and enjoy the snow there.
This is a very unique, open, unobstructed park, and it has been for 75 years.
And she brought up some other points, including that there's Summit Park and Altura Park nearby that actually have play structures. So they're like, you know, families that want play structures can go to those play structures. And the families then again argued, well, you have to cross a very busy Indian School or Carlisle to get to those parks. And we'd like it in our neighborhood and we'd like it to be where we can walk to it. And then Diane Dennisch, her reply to that was that she's like, I feel like that's more about the parents than children. Lots of debate over it.
I have worked for years in early childhood and child development with all kinds of policy issues in early childhood. And I worked with the various kinds of play areas and raised money for them. And what I know is the most creative way that kids play is on their own. They don't necessarily need a slide or a swing.
Your interview with Dennisch as well, she suggested that any citizen could call the governor to sort of personally lobby their side. I think disagreeing with the nature of that it's not hard to just sort of reach out and let your top lawmaker, the top elected official, the chief executive of the state know how you feel about a project.
Well, I spoke with the governor about this several weeks ago.
Dennisch tells me she called the governor and asked her to veto any funding for Netherwood Park.
A normal citizen can't just call up the governor and tell them their side. They weren't able to get that.
You know, I don't think that's true. I think that's a misconception.
I know I found that surprising hearing that because as a reporter, we deal with the gatekeeping like all the time, right? You know, you got to call the communications person. And I've even had this experience with a City of Albuquerque matter in the last few months. You know, I talked to one person who was directly working on the project and they immediately froze and said, you need to call our PIO. Essentially scared was the vibe that I got that, you know, whatever I was trying to do, which was set up an interview, you know, that how dangerous that could be us having this conversation outside of the PIO's directive or involvement, so to speak. So that being said, did these regular neighbors though feel that way that they could just call up the governor?
No. And
a response.
We go through this all the time. I mean, we have to go through PIOs. I mean, I have 10 emails between me and the governor's communications director on this story, that going back and forth, calls, several calls to him.
Yeah. And to be clear, you never spoke to the governor.
Yeah, I never spoke to the governor about this. No, to be clear.
You tried to.
I tried every possible way. And that's so important to me. And I want to be clear about that. Like, I really want to give everyone a fair shake in all of this. And that's what came down to with these families. Like, they felt like they didn't have this access, nor did they think that they needed to. They never thought that someone could just come and veto this money. And so, but they also felt from the city side as well that they were having a hard time not having the same access. And they definitely did not know the governor's number or even how to go about that. And Diane Dennish on her end said, you know, I really wish that, she's like, I just feel like that's a misconception and that there are open communications to the governor. And I wish that more people used it.
Okay. So it sounds like the governor did not directly respond to that claim that Dennish called to express her opposition to the project.
No, I asked several times, is there anybody else besides Diane Dennish that the governor talked to? And they said they would not discuss who they had spoken to about this project. So
I know another keynote in this story as well was that, you know, once that state funding was cut from the capital outlay bill, that about $200,000, sounds like the city also had some level of a decision that they made on their own, aside from the funding, that played a role in getting this project halted. So what was the city decision outside of the funding matter?
The city, on the city side, they came with the conclusion that, one, they wanted more consensus. There's hundreds of people that live in that neighborhood and they wanted to get more. The people that support the playground came back and said, hey, do you do this for every park? Are you just doing it because Diane Dennish lives in our neighborhood? And so they had some very specific questions for the city about that. The city also said that they were worried about the funding. And so, but I asked the director, Dave Simon, like, hey, this funding could have gone to another park. And he's like, our parks are always in need of funding. Like, they were always in need. And it really could have helped. Had it not gone to Netherwood, it would have gone to another park in the area and it could have helped. It's $200,000. So he did say that, and then he's like, and the funding was cut. And I'm like, well, we all know why the funding was cut. So that was an issue. You know, it's like, okay, how do we move forward from this?
Yeah. So I want to play just a portion of that interview that you did with David Simon. He's the director of Albuquerque Parks and Rec, who explained the city's decision on the park.
You know, our decision was made right now to not move forward on this play area right now for three reasons. The lack of adequate consensus for the project, the valid concerns about the project, and the lack of funding.
So in the mix of all of this, we understand Parks Director David Simon also hand-delivered some of those letters of opposition straight to Diane Dennish's home. And I know this is something that came out in just a conversation I was having with you in the newsroom, that you just sort of happened upon this because you were at her home to interview her, right? What was his reasoning for hand delivering those documents? And is there a personal connection there?
Yes. And that was the odd thing. You know, the night before I'm interviewing Diane Dennish in the park and a city car pulls up to her home. And then I'm like putting it together and I started interviewing the Parks and Recs director, which also, I mean, I asked, it took at least three times for an interview with the city. And they'd only do it through Zoom, which we normally don't do. He works down the street. So that was an issue for me. But I really wanted to get his side. And I'm like, okay, I'll do Zoom. And I asked him, I'm like, hey, did you just hand deliver all these emails from the neighbors to Diane Dennish's home? Or was it a city worker? And he's like, no, it was me. I'm like, are you going to hand deliver them to every neighbor? Are you going to hand deliver them to me? Because I want them. And He's like, yeah, it's a public document. And she made a request. And I'm like, yeah, but you went to her house. And how does that look? And he wouldn't ever, they would never acknowledge that Diane had anything to do with their decision not to move forward. But he just said it was based on those three things of why they were not moving forward. And I'm like, okay. And, but I made it clear, like, you see how this looks when you have neighbors who were complaining to me that they had sent emails back in February to Dave Simon and had never gotten a response, and it offering some solutions to the concerns that the neighbors who didn't want the playground had, offering, you know, she was a planner and facilitator and could do this kind of stuff and had some options for them. And
yeah, that really just helps paint the picture of like their claims, right? The unfair access or the equal access questions.
Yes.
To note, I don't think I've ever had an IPRA hand delivered to me by the director of a department or a leader of any, you know, whether it be city, state, county department. So it, again, it shows that level of an appearance, at least of preference here.
And access.
And I still, he did make them available to us. And I did send a photographer to go pick them up that afternoon from his office.
No hand delivery to
my house or News 13. So
what has been the response since your story was published? Have you heard from city officials or state officials, neighbors, other citizens, the governor's office?
I have heard lots of emails, mostly being thankful that even at this level that we expose what's happening with government, because that's just the stuff that's just unfair. And I've had like one email that stood out to me was from a 73-year-old man who said, you know, thank you. I've lived here my whole life and I've just, this is how New Mexico politics works and we have to keep a check on this. I did hear from the governor's office who was disappointed that I didn't use her statements, which I went through and I said, hey, I gave every single opportunity and my last email said that and spelled it out for you that I would sit down and do an interview and gladly be able to ask questions. And because it's only fair and it's only right that we ask these questions for the public. So I expected some pushback from them. I've not heard from the city. So, but I did get a lot of just feedback in general of that's just not right for someone to be able to do that.
And, you know, we know Diane Dennish did interview with you on camera for the story, but we also know sometimes there can be follow-up conversations after a story like this airs. Have you heard anything more, either directly or indirectly, from her?
She did put on social media that it was a slow news day, and that's all I've heard.
Okay.
Yeah, it is a fascinating story because I think it speaks so clearly to questions about access and privilege and connection, but yet there is, you know, suggestions like that it's a slow news day. It just furthers the sort of, I think, question about what really happened here. What was the decision that was made here? Why? Obviously, the governor never directly really answered to it. And then as well, the city gave its answers. At the same time, where we're at this point right now, the project seemingly is just paused. Do you have any indication that maybe this still could be a thing? The Netherwood Park playground might be there.
Senator Ortiz Pino is retiring, so there will be a new lawmaker taking his seat. And there was also some missteps. You know, I talked to the city too about why wasn't the city councilor, which is Tammy Feeblecorn, why wasn't she included in this? And she was upset that she had no idea about this. And Dave Simon said, hey, that was a misstep on my behalf. I should have invited her. I do think this will bring some more discussion and definitely, you know, see if there's some solutions to this. And one thing too, that the neighborhood, they wanted it wasn't gonna be this huge obstructing, like huge giant playground. It was going to be more of like a nature play so that it did fit into that. And they were trying to work with making everybody's needs met and happy with how they were gonna put that structure in there and just a nature play area. So they, you know, I do think that they can come up with, they're going to need funding. And that's the hard part is they don't have any money to move forward. They're just going to have to go back and really try to get funding again. And the city said that they'd be willing, you know, if they got funding again, then they'd be willing to work out some plans and try to see what could be the best part, you know, best for everybody that lives there.
So they have not closed the door on the
situation.
They
have not closed the door. And I think the families that really want one, I think it's really, you know, they're like, we're going to keep pushing forward because families want it. They were really looking forward to it. And I think at the one story that really just stood out to me about this whole project was, you know, I interviewed one dad who said, When I was in sixth grade, I hung out at my playground all the time, and I met, there's about 20 of us that are lifelong friends, that no matter where we live in the country, we meet up once a year. And it was from being in that park, and he wanted the same thing for his kids. And so
there's clearly, I think, no denial from really anybody that parks and playgrounds are an important factor of growing up, but it just how it happened in this situation and what to do is just fascinating.
Certainly not a big nothing burger if this many people have things to say about it.
Yeah, the air quotes, slow news day.
So, all right. Well, thank you, Jessica.
My pleasure. And I just want to say one more thing. I really in these long pieces and doing this kind of work, I really appreciate my team, Gabby, Chris, Dean Staley, Ann Perrette. They're such wonderful writers, and we really all come together and things like this. So I appreciate just being around those other journalists and the help in crafting these kind of stories. So my pleasure joining you guys today. Thank you so much.
Thanks again to KRQE News 13 evening anchor Jessica Gadate for joining us for this week's discussion. You know, these conversations are great to really flesh out all of the things that journalists such as Gabby and Jessica get to do in putting together these longer form stories that you guys work on. It's a lot of back and forth, and then it's got to come together very succinctly. And this was a story that had a lot of twists and turns, and I think it sounds like it will continue to. So
yeah, for sure. And if you have an idea for us that you'd like to hear about on the podcast, or someone you'd like us to interview, feel free to reach out. I'm gabrielle.burkhardt@krqe.com via email, and gburknm on social media.
And I'm chris.mckee@krqe.com, also @chrismckeeTV. Thanks for listening.